Hey, James.
Hey, it's been a while.
It has been a while. Of course, they don't know that.
They don't know that, no.
The listeners just, you know, every week, old reliable.
Mm-hmm.
Old reliable and older reliable. I'm only a little older, just a tad. A little bit. Just a tad. But yeah, you guys don't know. Sometimes we cue things up and we have a whole bunch in our back pocket. And then sometimes, like now, we go, uh-oh.
Somebody goes playing commando in the woods for a week and we can't record stuff, so...
I was. And then Henri came and chased me out of the woods. French. I don't think we have any listeners. We don't have any French listeners.
So, what's new?
What's new?
What have you been doing?
Let's see. We have a new patron. I think we've talked about him. I don't think we've talked about him on mic. His name is Andrew. And he's in Massachusetts, but he's originally from Wisconsin.
Good. It brings some class to the joint out there.
Mm-hmm. As a Wisconsinite, and you like making fun of my New England-ness, I'll say. Neither of those are words, by the way, that I just threw into that sentence. Yeah, I don't think either are real words. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so we got that going for us. It is the very end of August. We just got through a nasty heat wave, and now today was beautiful. Beautiful in a cooler way, where you weren't sweating the moment you got out of the shower or, you know, took a breath or anything like that.
So well, that's the way it's been here. It's 90 degrees and probably 85 or 90% humidity today. It was brutal.
All I can think
was, my God, I could be harvesting hops right now.
Oof. Yeah. No, thanks. No, thank you. Yeah, it is. It's definitely better here today. It's supposed to be decent tomorrow. I don't know where that's all heading. But
Justin up in Saskatchewan there, he ought to be starting to harvest hops here just about 4 days before it starts snowing.
That
so,
is
you know,
true.
He's got that going for him.
Weather. We've had our share of weather discussions.
We have.
It makes no sense. It's only going to get worse.
It absolutely. I guarantee it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so, you know, it's evening and I'm drinking water. I don't know what's with me tonight. I'm not taking advantage of the opportunity here to. I heard you pop something before the recording started.
I did, because I'm like, I'm not waiting. I'm just going for it. It was a slow and steady cream ale by Athletic Brewing Company.
Ah, I got some of those behind me too.
Mm-hmm. Quite nice.
Yes, that is a nice one. I had their the IPA, the ride,
Wild Ride,
Closer by the Mile. Is that?
Sure. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I had one of those this afternoon. I swear, even though there's no alcohol, I still have this mental block against it, and I feel a little tipsy after I have one.
Like a drunk girl on the floor in your dorm.
That's exactly. You
know, drinking the Sprite and grenadine and telling her it's a mixed drink, and she pretends to be drunk.
Yep. That is exactly who I am. Mm-hmm. Without question. Yep.
We need a lot hairier, though.
I don't know. There were some interesting girls where I went to school. We need a name for that girl. Lori. I'm going to call her Lori. Lori. How's
that's
that?
Lori. Yep.
Yeah. So yep. That's me getting drunk off of non-alcoholic beer.
Nice.
All right. So I think today we were going to talk about, well, you're going to talk about soil.
Yes.
I'm going to talk about dirt.
Mm-hmm. You should be ashamed of yourself, Mr. Boy Scout. You should know better.
Playing in the dirt is like one of the pillars of Boy Scoutiness.
Boy Scoutiness?
Boy Scoutiness.
Apparently phonics is not.
Maybe I should have a drink.
Yes, we're going to talk about soil today.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why we're talking about soil. It was probably at a request, but...
I think it was.
As I was trying to, talk about soil health, soil this, and I'm like... How the hell am I going to do that in 40 minutes? So,
well, you can. You know what? Before you start, don't stop recording. Hold on just a second here. Can't take it. I got a beer.
You're going to need it.
I am going to need it. This is a, and you're going to say, I can't believe you still have those. This is my last one. A key lime wit from vintage.
Oh, wow.
There we go.
Yeah. Let's talk about soil. Or as you said, dirt.
Dirt.
And my, one of my undergraduate professors way back in the dark ages would say, dirt is, he was very theatrical. Dirt is dead. Soil is alive. So we're going to talk about soil today because we're specifically talking about soil microorganisms and soil health in general at a high level, because this is an entire field of study and we are not going to do it justice on a single podcast or a dozen podcasts. There's a ton of information there. But I know that we've talked in the past quite a bit about soil nutrition, soil chemistry, mostly like pH and all that kind of stuff, and liming requirements. And I think that's when I talked to you last, I was like, that's kind of the direction I was going to go. And I started digging into it a little more, and I'm realizing that I'm not doing the listeners justice by just discussing one attribute. We need to talk about soil, the soil complex as a as an ecosystem, mm-hmm. as a system, period. And pH is a small part of that, and pH drives all sorts of things chemically and biologically in the soil system. But let's see, got a ton of notes here. So, I mean, what do you think? Don't be glib.
Oh, man. I was going to ask about mud, but okay.
Uh-huh. What do you think of? What is soil?
In all honesty, when I think about soil, when I do get, you know, dirt off the mind, when I envision healthy soil, I see loose, I see worms, I see life.
And like, why? Like, do you know why that's like healthy?
Well, I don't know. I think something that, for it to support life, it would have to be healthy, or the contrapositive, to be healthy, it would have to support life.
Right.
Yeah. To me, the word soil just sounds like something that is, this is the wrong word, but nutritious. You know, it is. It's feeding your plants. Right. Yeah.
Well, it's a substrate. So if we look at soil, the really, let's call it classical view of soil, which is part of the reason this classical view of soil is part of the reason we're in such dire economic straits right now. Soil was just a physical substrate required basically to keep plants upright. That's it. And the advent, and this is the classical view, I'm not talking like ancient man, I'm talking about just post tractor revolution. So 20th century classical view of soil. And it was something that we could take for granted as just a physical substrate into which we put stuff like fertilizer. Mm-hmm. It's soil is there for roots to grow into to hold themselves to the ground. So they don't apparently they have anti-gravity problems. I don't know.
And so, maybe it holds a little water for them.
Maybe, exactly. And it's like a sponge, and that's all it is. Mm-hmm. And that is that quote classical view is a massive disservice to the complexity of soil, but resulted in a mentality of monocropping and factory farming that soil is something you just dump stuff onto, and it is a vehicle that carries, like you said, water and nutrients into the plant. And mm-hmm. that could not be further from the truth.
Ah, okay.
And unfortunately, that's what our modern agriculture has been built around. So it's only really been in the last, there were hippies in the 70s that were talking about soil health and composting and all this kind of stuff. And you know what? They weren't wrong. But it was so far out there, man. It's like, why would you waste your time doing that when you can just buy fertilizer and dump it all over everything? Now, I'm not necessarily talking about organic production here. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about the soil as it's a living system. It's an ecosystem. And as you know, I love my systems. As a system becomes more and more complex, and you get further and further away from it, like you gain altitude from it, like you're getting away from the details.
Sure.
It all starts to look very simple. Because all you're really seeing are the, you know, three or four or half a dozen major activities going on. And it's very easy to just sort of take for granted the complexity that's going, that's really is going on there. And what is ultimately responsible for plant health is all the soil microorganisms that make up a healthy soil. Hmm. So what is a healthy soil? If you had a soil health in general is measured by its microbial activity. Its activity and its, so its relative level of activity, how many microbes you have and how active they are. I mean, you could have gobs of microbes in there, but they could all be really super sluggish, right? Because it's cold and they're not doing anything. So that's, you've got a high, what we call bio load, but you don't have a lot of biological activity because they're kind of dormant. Likewise, if you look at a subtropical soil that's very warm and very moist, that's, it could have fewer microorganisms per unit volume, but actually be producing more carbon dioxide, therefore being seen as being more bioactive.
And I imagine that changes, you know, you mentioned dormancy. It, I imagine that changes with temperature and seasons and to some degree.
Temperature, seasons, rainfall, mm-hmm. what's growing on the soil, whether it's been tilled or not, what's what has grown in that soil over time, what the soil profiles are, pH. Yeah, lots and lots of stuff.
It's its own environment, its own system.
Yep, it is. And we call that the interaction between the world of the soil, soil microbes, and interaction with plants. We call that the rhizosphere.
The rhizosphere.
Rhizosphere, right. And that sounds like something from a Marvel movie.
I was just going to say that.
The rhizosphere. That whole living system. But we, getting back to how we measure the health of the soil, we measure the biomass, so the actual mass of the living creatures in it, and their respiration, how much CO2 they're giving off, how active are they. And you might think like, wow, I really want a soil that's got a lot of microbes in it, and you know, I want a high rate of respiration. Well, as things, you know, as the definition of respiration, you are consuming oxygen and you're releasing what? If you're taking in oxygen, what's the other gas you're going to release?
Carbon dioxide.
Carbon dioxide. Correct. What's the major greenhouse gas that we are all concerned about right now?
Oh, ozone.
What are you, 1980s? No, carbon dioxide, dumbass. So, so this idea of having a high respiration rate in the soil as a measure of, you know, higher is better for soil microbial health. No, it isn't. It just means that those microbes have more than enough, or maybe an abundance of things to eat and an abundance of oxygen, well, to grow and have little other critters and have them eat and grow and have little other critters. And so you're giving off more and more CO2, but you're depleting soil oxygen. And so you get these big spikes, right? So you could have a big spike in oxygen, and boom, all of a sudden these microbes start going to town and chewing up anything they can get a hold of in terms that's edible. And we're going to talk about that in a second. And as soon as the oxygen is depleted, they're going to go back down. They're either going to go dormant, they're going to die off because there's not enough oxygen to take in to respire anymore. That's what happens every time we till soil physically. We release massive amounts of carbon dioxide into the air. And so part of the philosophy behind no-till agriculture, I don't know if you've ever heard that or not. Mm-mm. The philosophy behind no-till agriculture is disturb the soil as little as possible. Because the soil, all that carbon that's captured by the plant, you know, because a plant brings in CO2. And it fixes that carbon into its structure, which includes roots. So as long as, you know, that plant dies and those roots, all that carbon is going to decompose because it's going to be eaten by the critters that are down there. And that carbon is now going to stay locked in the soil. if you go and till that and turn it over, you flush oxygen into the soil, and all of that organic matter that's down there now from those dead plants and other microbes, it's game on for eating. And so your microbial population is going to explode. It's going to just plow through all there is to eat there, release this huge, giant belch of CO2, and then go dormant again. So you go through these big spikes, and it's a massive shock to that soil ecosystem, this act of constant tilling.
Huh.
So this idea of no-till, there's an entire group of agricultural equipment designed around not to till anymore. So instead of the classical view of tilling the soil, first you got to till, you know, churn it all up, and then you're going to plow it and make furrows, make rows, and put seeds in it, and everything's going to grow, and then you get corn, right? So the idea behind no-till is, instead of plowing that soil up, why don't you just take and like drill a seed into the soil that's there? Why do you have to open the soil?
Right.
And you don't. The answer is you don't. So they have this no-till agriculture now I shouldn't say now. It's not like it's something that's brand new. It's been around for decades. But, you know, it was originally designed to reduce erosion and soil losses, because every time you crack open the top of the soil with a plow, any of the biomass, let's say from last year's crop, or let's say it's a meadow or something like that, all those roots and all that plant material that was holding the soil in place is now disrupted. So when water comes through, big rains, big snow runoffs, you can have big erosion events, and you're carrying that topsoil away into usually rivers and streams, and ultimately into the Mississippi or wherever you're at, and then out into the Gulf, and now you have a dead zone. So the idea behind no-till was, well, let's keep the soil where it is by not disturbing it, and we'll just drill seeds right through the whatever debris was left from last year's crop. Mm-hmm. Works great, works fine, as long as you got the right equipment to do that.
Sure.
The added benefit that really wasn't, I won't say advertised, but really wasn't considered that big of a deal early on, like in the 70s and 80s when no-till was coming up, but is a huge issue now, is this idea of CO2 blooms from tilling. And I can't stress that enough. That's a massive, massive amount. I've got all kinds of calculations if you wanted to talk math, but I want to keep it at a high level right now. That looks at how much carbon dioxide is released through tilling versus no tilling. That's pertinent to hop growers, because what is one, the primary method for weed control in our hop yards? Tilling.
Yeah.
Constant tilling. We call it moonscaping. Things are tilled so much. And it's great. It does a really good job for controlling weeds. No problem. But it's also cracking that soil open and adding oxygen into the soil that can cause these big, massive microbial blooms. Now, in some cases, the soil may be so poor in health that you need to oxygenate it and maybe compact it. So imagine that nice, healthy soil. It's kind of fluffy, you said, right? It's loose.
Yeah.
As you compact that soil, you're squishing those air out of the soil, gases out. You're squishing the sponge flat. So if you get a flat sponge, there's no way for that sponge to absorb any nutrients, any foodstuffs for these soil microbes, let alone your plants. So that's what we call compaction. So when the soil gets compact, we have to go through and physically break that up. And you either do that, your first thing would be, well, let's go through and till. We'll break it up. Tilling is what's likely caused the compaction in the first place, because you're physically shearing the soil particles into smaller and smaller and smaller fragments. And then you're driving over it constantly. And so you're compacting it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it does make sense.
Yeah. So a lot of times you'll see this happening on people's lawns or on sports fields. You'll see them go through and do what they call aeration. So they go through with this little device, a spiked wheel that's got all these little doodads on it that cores down into the turf and pops out this little plug. And you'll see it looks like lawn turds all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so you're creating pockets of or channels for air to get down into that soil that has been compacted over, you know, how many soccer games or football games. And the same thing is true in the hop yard. One does not need to till the soil to break up its compaction. One can simply go through and do something like ripping.
Just aerate.
Which is, yeah, which is like a single tine on the back of your tractor. And you go through and you break through that compaction layer and you physically shatter it to allow for good drainage, more aeration, things like that. But we're not like using a rototiller and going through and just really churning up the soil like we might for weed control.
I'm picturing the Ron Popeil garden weasel.
Pretty much. Pretty much, yep.
That's what we're talking about here.
Anyway, so we talked about, I wanted to talk about the CO2 thing here because and soil respiration, because ultimately it's important to understand that soil is a living thing. It's alive. And what's in the soil? So at a very macro level, you've got these following classes of things. We call microorganisms, bacteria, actinomycetes, which used to be classified as a fungus, but it is not a fungus. It's more maybe closely related to yeast. You've got fungi, algae, protozoa, which are multicellular microorganisms as opposed to bacteria being single cellular, and nematodes, which are sort of like teeny tiny worms.
Please say they're frogs. Please say they're frogs.
They are not. They are not frogs. Sorry. So all of these things are in the soil, and it's a lot. Like, what do you mean? Like, how much is a lot? So you're good with math, right?
I've been told.
Yes. So please tell our listeners, when I give you a little scientific notation, exactly what this number is.
Okay.
So if I were to tell you that the number of bacteria in a gram, a single gram of soil, and if anybody doesn't know how much a gram is, look it up. It's tiny in a gram of soil.
It's a paperclip.
It's one milliliter of water is a gram. Or a 10 to the 8 to 10 to the 9 number of bacteria in a gram of soil. So what is 10 to the 8 in a number that non-nerds would understand?
Hold on, I'm putting my commas in because I need that in order to put it into math words. That is 100 million.
10 to the 8 to 10 to the 9. So 100 million.
To a billion.
To a billion. Bacteria. Actual bacteria in a single gram of soil. Actinomycetes, 10 to the 7 to 10 to the 8. Right? So let's say 100 million. In that range. Fungi, 10 to the 5 to 10 to the 6. Algae, 10 to the 4, 10 to the 5. Protozoa, 10 to the 3 to 10 to the 4. And nematodes, 10 to the 2 to 10 to the 3. So you see, as I was going down that list, the number was getting smaller.
They're probably larger.
They were way bigger.
Yeah.
Like orders of magnitude, which is why we see orders of magnitude decrease in the number that's in the soil, because the nematodes and the protozoa are feeding on the algae and the fungi and the bacteria. So it's a rich, rich tapestry. It's a ton of organisms in that soil. And when I say a ton, I literally mean tons of microorganisms in the soil. Like if you look at an acre at plow depth, which is 6 to 8 inches, you could be talking 15 to 25 tons. Tons in the top 6 to 8 inches in an acre, just of living stuff.
Wow.
And I'm not talking soil. I'm not talking the physical particles and minerals that make up soil. I'm talking just the living fraction. It's enormous in a healthy soil. But that's the engine of the soil right there. It's all those microbes. It's the living portion. Oof. And we can't neglect that, because if you do, suddenly you're going to start running into issues with like nutrient availability, or you're going to start running into issues with soil structure. It's not going to be loose like you talked about before, that we would call that friable, where it's kind of, you can squeeze it a little bit and it holds together, but it breaks apart and it's kind of fluffy and what we would call loamy. Well, when the soil microbial health is really poor, that structure isn't there because a lot of the characteristics of that soil are endowed by the fact of just the sheer number of microorganisms that are there and sort of the things that they exude, polysaccharides and whatnot, that give soil structure. So something like sand has very, very, very low microbial load. Dust. Okay. You can think about that, right? It's just like, you look at a soil, it's been, think of like a old country road that's been driven on for decades and decades and decades and decades, an old dirt road. It's just, it's pounded into dust.
Right.
There's nothing there. It's nothing alive in it anymore. That's dirt.
That is dirt. And it comes back to when you asked at the very beginning, what do I think of when you say soil? And I think of life. Mm-hmm. And there's no sign of life in dust, in sand.
Right. Very, 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 very. There are living things there, but they're so few and far between.
And they're not the living things you want to like take home and introduce to your parents. You know, there's not that kind of living things. Whereas in soil, you've, again, life-giving
bacteria. Absolutely. I mean, whose parents don't want to meet actinomycetes? I mean, really, come on now. If we think about that dust on an old country road as being mostly devoid of life, we have autonomous robots driving around on another planet basically looking for a single fossilized microbe in what I would consider to be dirt. Talk about needle in a haystack doesn't even cover it. Because if we're talking about on a healthy soil on the planet Earth, you've got 15 tons to the acre of living stuff, and we can't find one lousy microbe on the planet of Mars, that says something. That blows my mind.
Yeah.
You'd think if they had been there, we would find evidence of them, right? Maybe to come. But anyway, so this concept of healthy soil is all about critters and their ability to reproduce and eat and do all that kind of stuff. Well, they got to eat something, right? So what are they eating? Well, they're eating each other, for one. They're eating organic matter, like from plants. So plants and animals that die and go into the soil and they decompose. Well, that act of decomposition is being driven by bacteria and fungi and all the things that we just talked about.
Sure.
It's interesting, though, because as you start looking at this, you've got different kinds of and you hear me talk about organic matter in the soil and why it's important. Well, this organic matter is what's going to ultimately feed these critters. We keep talking about, well, you got to increase the organic matter in your soil. You want to have soil with high organic matter. Okay, well, why? Well, it helps the cation exchange capacity, and organic matter has a lot of sites on it that nutrients can adhere to when you put your fertilizer down, which is all absolutely true, but it's also food for these soil microbes because they're the ones that are going to be taking that fertilizer you put down, whether it's organic or conventional, and turning it into a form your plant can use. So it's not enough to have organic matter there just to hold on to the nutrient. You also have to have it there to feed your critters to take the nutrients you're putting into the organic matter to turn it into something your plant can use. It's an engine. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of different types of organic matter. So it's composed of what we call living and dead.
I've heard of both of those terms.
But have you heard of very dead? I kid you not. This is the three types of soil organic
living
matter.
Dead and very only in The Princess Bride have I heard of almost dead.
Almost dead.
But not correct. Very dead.
Very dead, yes. So the living fraction is obviously the microorganisms. The dead is what we can call fresh residues. Now, that could be freshly dead, recently deceased, let's say, microorganism or plant biomass.
Okay.
Long clippings. That's dead. It's not very dead yet. The very dead is the stuff that we call humus. That's like the dark brown to black stuff that makes soil. It is pretty much as decomposed as it's ever going to get. It certainly in the span of human existence. So it's the living, the dead, and the very dead.
And the very dead.
Yes. I know.
Yeah.
Mind blown, right? Soil scientists, they are so, so creative.
And really, for all of our talk about science being important, I mean, that is such a using relative terminology like that, even dead and very dead. That's not clear delineation. That's not measurable.
Give these people a break. They're excited by soil. Okay.
Okay.
Is what gets them riled up.
know your audience. Fair point. Mm-hmm. Fair point.
So of those fractions that I talked about, there's an active and a passive component. So the active component is about 30 to 35% of the overall soil organic matter. That's the living and the dead. That's, mm-hmm. quote, fresh plants and recently deceased animal detritus. That's food for microbes. And it's easily torn apart by them into like sugars and proteins and stuff like that. The passive soil organic matter is that the very dead t-shirt. So that's the stuff that's resistant to decomposition now. So soil microbes basically cannot break this stuff down any further. The only way to break it down any further would be through things like extreme heat or pressure or like chemical processes, acids, stuff like that. It's usually made up of some of the backbones of like wood, like lignin, which is very, very resistant to decomposition. Long chain carbon compounds protected by other atoms. But this idea of having an active component and a passive component. So if we say in the soil 30 to 35% is active, that's basically stuff that a plant critters can eat in order to reproduce. That's really what we're affecting. When we say we need to add organic matter to our soil, we're talking about that active component.
Okay.
The dead, not the very dead, but the dead. In some cases, we're adding living. So I don't know if you've ever heard of things like compost tea. Have you ever heard of that? It's not compost something tea. You have with your granny on Sundays. I don't know if you do. If your granny was like mine and was into gardening, you might have compost tea in the mornings on Sundays. But it's this idea of taking what we would consider healthy living soil or composted organic matter with a lot of living microorganisms in it and steeping it in water, aerating it, and giving it some simple sugars to eat. So you are basically, it's an incubator for soil microbes. You're trying to get them to reproduce. And so you're taking this liquid and you're actually making a nutrient dense, I should say not nutrient, a microbiological dense liquid that then you go and use as like your irrigation water. So you're taking those critters and putting them in the soil.
Hmm.
And you're like, wow, that's really cool. And I've got hop growers thinking, oh man, that's how I'm going to unlock my potential. Hold on there. How do you know you don't already have enough in your soil?
Yeah, because we haven't talked at all about measurement or about too much in terms of microorganisms.
Right. So you're like, oh, compost tea, it's got to be great for the soil, right? Well, it's like you're going through all this effort to make these, you know, get these critters to reproduce. You're releasing CO2, by the way. And you're going to put it on your soil, but what's going to happen? Well, they're going to make my soil healthy. Only if that soil has enough, A, housing for them, and B, food for them. So if you don't know that to begin with, adding more soil microbes isn't going to help you. You've got to know what your soil organic matter content is to begin with and its relative health. What is the population in the soil before you start saying, I'm going to add more residents to the Hilton that's already booked? Not going to work. Mm-hmm. So the way that's done is through, well, we measure respiration. We take a known volume of soil and we put it in an incubator at a known temperature for a known amount of time, and we measure how much carbon dioxide comes off that soil. That's a measure of soil microbe population. And then we can calculate. We can say, wow, your bio load, your microbial bio load is low. Yeah, add some more critters. But why is it low? It's low because it doesn't have enough, they either don't have enough places to live, they don't have enough stuff to eat, or the conditions are not appropriate for them, right? They're not hospitable. So what does that mean? It could have too much salt buildup. So soils that are continually over-fertilized with conventional synthetic fertilizers build up salts in them that have to be leached away with a lot of water. And that's not necessarily good for the soil microbes because they don't like high salt content. So you could actually not, your salt content in your soil could be too high. The pH could be wrong.
Sure.
You could say, yeah, I could carry this. I've got 3% organic matter and my soil is not compacted. So I know there's enough aeration. I'm going to put more, critters on there and everything's going to be wine and roses, except the soil pH is too low or too high. And so that automatically pushes some critters to the edge of habitation, right? They can't survive there. So now we talk about, okay, now let's bring that. In order for me to get my soil health up, I have to bring my soil health maybe into a more appropriate pH range. And I might need to have more organic matter. And I might need to change the soil structure. All before I say, I'm going to add more soil microbes because that's what's good. No, it isn't. It's a complex system, and you can't just leave one thing for granted. And I figured that this whole discussion was to talk about soil microbes and this concept of soil as a living thing. And we can talk more in depth later, as I'm sure some of the hopnologists will want to hear more about each one of these other components and how they all work together. But it's not something that can be neglected because it ultimately will drive a healthy hop yard.
Yeah. Yeah, and to your point, I mean, the measurement piece, and we always seem to come back to measurement and to knowing what's in front of you, and there's no size fits all. The example you just gave, you can add more microbes till the cows come home, but if the pH can't sustain them, there's no benefit there.
You're wasting your time and resources. Mm-hmm. In some cases, you could be doing bad things because the act of adding more soil microorganisms could actually be working to lower the pH. And if you've already got a low pH, that's not good.
Yeah.
So you know why you're doing what you're doing. Don't just do it because it's supposed to be good. A little can go a long way. And we know from several other episodes that
more is not always better.
Mm-hmm. I can't stress that enough. More is not necessarily better.
Just saying that leans us into rant territory.
It does. It does. I mean, there's so much to talk about here. I'm having a hard time. I got through the first three lines of my notes in this episode.
Wow.
Yeah. It's dense. And I think ultimately, I was thinking about this just before we started recording tonight. We've made reference to a couple of times that we have to increase the output, the agricultural output yield of our soils by 50 to 70% over the next 30 years to feed the population. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Part of that is going to come from proper soil health management. Because what we didn't get into is the mechanics of how soil microbes acquire and release plant available nutrients and what that interaction looks like. We can save that for another episode and how to manipulate that properly. Without throwing the whole system out of whack. And the more and more I understand, certainly from the research that's coming out about the dynamics of soil microbe systems, I can see why the far organic side has some points about soil health. However, what I do believe also, like we just talked about, was that more is not necessarily better. And while we know soil health is important, you have to be able to measure it and you have to be able to monitor it and not just say, let's put on more and more compost because it'll make things better. It might not. No, carbon dioxide, dumbass.